Hi, this is Amy Maddock. I'm Director of Employer Relations, and I am talking today with Elizabeth Lazarus-Smith, who is a Senior Managing Director at SJL Attorney Search in New York, and we are going to discuss the New York legal market. Thank you so much for your time, Elizabeth. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here, Amy.
Thank you. So I guess to kick us off, can you describe the size of the legal market in New York and what type of legal work is typically done there?
Yes, absolutely. The New York City legal market is the largest in the country. There are over 200 large law firms here, both based in New York as well as based abroad, as well as several smaller firms. And the different types of work that are done really run the gamut from corporate to litigation, bank regulatory, IP, employment. It really, any sort of practice area that exists in the country will be well represented in New York.
So can you talk a little bit about which practice areas might be particularly in demand at the moment? Are there any that are experiencing a lull in demand? Kind of an assessment of what's hot and what's not.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with what's hot right now first and what's trending. So for the past few years, where we've seen the most activity and the greatest growth have been with respect to transactional practices. Specifically, M&A has been really busy. Commercial finance has been really busy. Real estate has been very busy. Different investment fund management practices have been busy. Capital markets and bank regulatory or transactional practices, they have been stable, although not necessarily as robust as M&A and finance. And then with respect to what it has not been as busy, things that are starting to show some diminished activity, you know, that would actually be litigation as a whole. Every year there are periodicals that show that revenue at law firms is decreasing by a couple percent every year, and we're seeing that dovetail with the uptick in transactional practices since law firms want to go where the activity is the highest. And we're also seeing, I would say, something that had been slow until very recently, but now is less slow and actually picking up a lot of steam, which has been bankruptcy. We're really seeing a lot of hiring in the bankruptcy space. You know, a few years ago, bankruptcy filings had been down. They're up in 2016, and it's looking like that will continue. And then in terms of practices that are becoming more popular with lawyers, and areas that we're starting to see develop more comprehensively in New York that might not have existed with as much vigor until recently, I would say that those include venture capital and emerging companies and emerging markets. We're seeing, you know, a lot of work from California come in to New York and a lot of lawyers being interested in that, as well as what we call IP or tech transactions. That's going to be outsourcing, licensing, you know, different corporate work related specifically to tech companies or different intellectual property. And then another popular practice, because there are so many private investment funds in New York, is private equity, which in some firms can be a separate practice group from M&A.
Okay. Oh, that's great. That's helpful. Where do the clients in these practices come from? Are there particular industries driving the work? I mean, I assume in New York it's the banks. But is there anything else that is driving the work in New York?
Yeah, absolutely. You're correct. New York is the financial center of the country, and as a result, any firm is going to have a lot of financial institutions clients. Some of those will be the large banks. Other of those will be smaller banks or perhaps some of these private funds I had mentioned. Those can be private equity funds, hedge funds, hybrid alternative lending funds, mutual funds that can be registered. And those types of clients are going to have needs across all practice areas. So for instance, if you're interested in litigation, you'll have a lot of clients in the financial industry space, and that's, there's no getting around that if you want to practice in New York. If you're an employment litigator, an employment lawyer, or a labor lawyer, a lot of your clients there are going to be the financial institutions. But that said, there's a lot of different types of companies here as well, or clients from elsewhere that look to law firms in New York for their legal needs. So you'll have, you know, large consumer products companies, retail companies, you know, small privately owned companies that perhaps make a new tech product or are software companies dealing with IP. So any type of company you could imagine will be somewhat represented in New York, but by far the largest in terms of volume and revenue are going to be related to financial institutions.
So are there any skill sets that you find that these firms are particularly seeking, anything that's in particularly high demand in terms of prior work experience or things that they that students may have done over the summer?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, most law firms aren't necessarily expecting law students going into the summer to have a large background in terms of the law and legal technical skills. That said, there are certain types of experiences that I think could be well received. For instance, because IP, both on the litigation and the transactional side, has been so busy, if someone is interested in that and has either an undergraduate degree or a graduate degree in a related area, whether it be in the life sciences area or in the technical computer or electrical or mechanical engineering side, I think that that would be helpful to highlight for those students. I think any work experience would be, you know, helpful to highlight. However, plenty of law students have come directly from their college and will probably have a lot to talk about in terms of summer internships that they've done to be able to bring that experience to bear. So while people shouldn't worry if they don't have prior work experience or a technical degree, to the extent people have those, it's always great to mention those.
Great. Thank you. So what about when the firms are recruiting? Is there anything, are firms in New York looking for anything else in particular, or are strong ties to New York generally required?
You know, generally no. And that's because it is such a large legal market and there are so many sophisticated matters, whether on the transactional side or the litigation side, happening here. Most law firms wouldn't be surprised to see a student expressing an interest in the New York market, even if they have no ties to New York. And a lot of times, law students want to begin their career in New York just to be able to have that training at the outset and then decide whether they want to stay in New York or whether they want to relocate elsewhere. So it's not as necessary in New York as it may be in other cities to show any sort of prior ties to the city itself. That said, if there are particular reasons why someone is really excited to be in New York, it never hurts to mention, but it certainly wouldn't be a deal breaker. Now, the one caveat to that would be if someone wants to start practicing in another city and then might potentially want to move to New York down the road. Now, it's certainly possible that firms in New York would be very excited to review the materials of a lawyer who had begun their career in another city and wants to move to New York. But I think at that point, having a reason to be in New York would become more important just because they would want to know that this person was making the move thoughtfully and for the long term.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. What about what types of careers? You know, we were talking about just a second ago about people who may want to lateral into the New York market. What if somebody starts their career in New York and then decides that they, you know, may not want to stay there or want to try something different? You know, what types of careers do associates pursue after starting their career in New York, and what practice areas might they choose based on their long-term goals?
Yep, absolutely. I heard a couple of different questions in there. One, I guess, would be the corollary of what I just mentioned about lawyers looking to come into New York versus lawyers who look to start in New York and then move. And then the second is what types of long-term careers outside of law firms might lawyers and these students who are about to become lawyers be able to pursue. So taking the relocation question first, lawyers who begin in New York and then decide to relocate somewhere else tend to be very well received in the market. Again, there's an assumption, and usually a correct one, that someone who's practicing at a firm in New York is getting very solid experience just given the level of activity here and the types of training that firms can provide. And so as long as someone has some sort of reason for the relocation, whether it be they want to return home or they're moving for family reasons, those lawyers will tend to be able to pursue opportunities elsewhere. And we see that happen regularly. Now, for lawyers who choose to stay in New York but might then not want to stay at their first firm their entire career, there are a lot of different paths that these individuals can take. One is, to the extent someone is thinking about partnership, but they don't want to be a partner at a large law firm, or they think it might be really difficult to make partner at their large law firm, we see a lot of lateral activity to smaller firms where they're able to take their really solid experience from the large firm, hit the ground running, make an immediate impact, and then ultimately become partner at a smaller firm. We also see a lot of different career paths outside of the law firm space. One very common one is moves to the government. New York City has a lot of government agencies. D.C. has a lot of government agencies, and a lot of other cities as well tend to be popular for government moves. If someone is thinking about the government, then a background in litigation or in regulatory spaces would be quite helpful. You know, a lot of litigators would like to become prosecutors, so they'll want to spend some time at the U.S. Attorney's Office. Some go to the SEC. Some go to the DOJ. Some go to, you know, smaller agencies like the CFPB or FINRA. We see a lot of different types of government moves by litigators and by regulatory lawyers. Another common path that lawyers from law firms like to take is to move in-house, which means you go to working within one entity, whether it be a bank, whether it be a company, whether it be a fund. It can be public, it can be private. There is a huge variety of in-house careers. For the most part, in-house jobs tend to focus on transactional skill sets. And that's because litigation is so complex and so voluminous and so time-consuming that most companies can't do it themselves and will always need to rely on outside counsel for it. There are, of course, certain exceptions, you know, employment-specialized litigators or insurance-specialized litigators, for instance, can often find opportunities in-house somewhat more easily than a general commercial litigator can. But for the most part, in order to maximize your ability to go in-house, you'll probably want to pursue a transactional practice. M&A, for instance, is one of the more generalized corporate areas, and as a result, their skill set tends to be flexible and fluid and more easily transferable to in-house roles than some other more nuanced or specialized practices can be.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. I was interested to hear about the regulatory piece because I know that, you know, obviously there's a lot of regulatory work to be done in D.C., but it's good to know that there are opportunities in New York as well.
There is. Bank regulatory and financial institutions regulations is an area that many large law firms have here. You know, they're with Dodd-Frank as well as all other Sarbanes-Oxley types of regulations that have come out and been amended and revised over the years. It's been a burgeoning area, and those lawyers tend to be able to go to the government or in-house. They're sort of able to keep a lot of doors open as they progress in their career.
Well, that's great. Thank you. You know, when we first started, you were talking about the different types of firms that we find in New York. And so I'd like to talk a little bit more about the differences between the large firms and within that group, you know, the New York-based firms, the non-New York-based U.S. firms, and then the British firms that have a strong, or the U.K.-based firms that have strong presence in New York, and the smaller firms and the boutiques. And do you have any thoughts on reasons why a student might want to choose one over the other, and what career paths might be available to attorneys who choose certain types over others?
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a tough question because so much of this assumes that someone is going to know exactly what they want to do by the time they're a second-year law student in order to pick the quote-unquote best firm for them. And while many firms will probably make sense for most individuals, there is some guidance as to what the difference is between these types of firms as well as what they mean for long-term career paths can bring to bear. So taking the distinction between, say, full-service firms and boutiques first, you know, the benefit of a full-service firm is that you can try a lot of different practice areas. Most people don't start their summer knowing exactly what practice area they want to pursue, and even if they think they have an idea, they still want to have the opportunity to sample assignments in a few different areas just to confirm that their instinct was correct. And so with a full service firm, you're able to take assignments from different areas. Also, those types of large full service firms often provide very formalized, robust training and orientation programs during the first year and sometimes even during the first 2 years. And a lot of junior associates find those programs very helpful because it's really how they're laying the groundwork for this legal skill set that they're developing as quickly as possible. And another benefit of a full-service firm is that from a financial stability perspective, if you have a firm that has practices in several different areas, then during times when the market is slow in some of those areas, the other practice areas will still be able to pick up some of the slack. Whereas at a boutique, if they're strong in one area, but then that area sees a slowdown, then the firm might struggle to stay as profitable as it had been in years past. Now, that said, there are benefits to boutiques as well. They tend to be very strong in one specific area. So for those students who know exactly what they want to do with their career, either from past work experience or from someone they know having gone into that career previously, a boutique can often be a very prestigious platform for one to begin his or her career. And because boutiques tend to be a little bit smaller than the large global full-service firms, matters tend to be more leanly staffed, and as a result, junior associates can oftentimes receive very substantive experience from the outset of his or her career. So those are some distinctions between full-service firms and boutiques, and then there are also distinctions between firms based in New York and firms based not in New York, and even firms based not in the U.S. at all, since there are several firms that are, say, based in the U.K. that have offices here in New York. And where a lot of distinctions come from with respect to these types of firms fall into three different areas. One is the client base. Two is where the business origination comes from, and three is where the firm decisions happen. So client base, for instance, is If you're a firm based in New York, you might have a lot of clients also based in New York. If you're a firm based in Silicon Valley, a lot of your clients, even in a New York office, could be from the Silicon Valley. If you're at a firm based in the UK, you could be working with a lot of clients based in London or elsewhere in the UK. And where business origination comes from means where do the partners who develop the most business sit? Sometimes the answer will be New York, and other times the answer will be another office, perhaps that law firm's home office. And so what does it mean for your career if you are practicing in the New York office of a firm where a lot of the business generators sit elsewhere? It could have an impact on the work you're doing as well as on your path to partnership, because you need to ensure that you're working in an office and for lawyers who have the capacity to support you on your path to partnership and who can make the business case for you to be promoted to partner. And that really ties into where the firm decisions happen as well. Look at where firm management sits. Do people who are on the management or the executive committee sit in New York? If so, it means that the New York office will have say in how the firm is run and how the firm operates internally. If all of the members of the executive committee sit outside of New York, it could mean that the New York office doesn't have as much say in certain, you know, either internal or external policies that the lawyer might care about.
That makes sense. What about any resources that you might suggest students should utilize as they begin to prepare their bid list and prepare for the interview process? Is there anything that is sort of universally helpful, and is there any resource that you might point to that's specific to New York?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think at a macro level, staying apprised of current events, you know, glancing at the Times, glancing at the Journal, glancing at other large newspapers just to get a sense of what legal activity is going on in New York can be very helpful, both because it shows you which law firms are involved in which deals and for which clients, but also just because you become a sophisticated consumer of the legal market. One website that I love and recommend to a lot of lawyers and people thinking about becoming a lawyer is Chambers and Partners and Chambers and Associates. Chambers is a terrific resource because it's compiled from client data. And so you're able to pick a specific market or a specific practice that's interesting to you and very quickly filter for who are the key players in that space, who their clients are, what firms tend to be well regarded in this area. And so you're able to put together a bid list focusing on firms that are strong in the areas you think you'd like to explore. I also think that talking to friends and classmates who have summered at firms that interest you can be really helpful just to get their on-the-ground perspective.
Well, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, we often send students to those very same resources, so it's good to hear that we're all on the same page there.
Definitely, yeah.
Elizabeth, this has been really, really helpful, and I really appreciate your time. But in closing, do you have any additional advice for students who are thinking of summering in New York?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to the extent you start in a full-service firm that has several different practice areas, even if you think you're 99.9% sure you know what practice interests you, I'd really encourage you to utilize the summer to explore a few different areas for a few different reasons. One is sometimes you don't have a great sense of what the day-to-day is like for a lawyer in a different practice area, and once you're able to see it firsthand, you realize that your strengths and your skills would make you a really terrific lawyer in that practice. And even if you ultimately decide that your instinct was correct and you were destined to be a litigator or you were destined to be a tax lawyer, there's only benefits that will inure if you're still able to introduce yourself to lawyers in other practice areas, because if you accept the offer, this will be where you begin your career, and you'll want your network at the firm to be as large and vibrant as possible. And on that point, even after your summer ends and you're back in D.C., keep up your networking efforts, whether it be to check in periodically with some of the partners you worked with over the summer, whether it be to check in with your associate mentor or just other people in your summer class. Don't let the entire year go by without talking to anyone you met during the summer. And also, grades always matter. We really see that legal employers tend to care about grades. So just because you have the offer at your firm and you know where you'll be starting your career as a first year, don't slack too much your 3L year, because you don't want to be that person sitting in an interview and getting asked the question of why all of a sudden your grades precipitously dropped off after your 2L year.
That's right. It's very good advice. You never want to let rest on your laurels, right?
Exactly.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And I hope you have a great rest of the day and enjoy your summer.
Thank you. My pleasure. I hope this was helpful.
Thank you. Very helpful. Thank you.